Just yesterday, we were talking about the State of the Union speech from the perspective of women's issues. And one of the clips that we played was President Obama talking about pay equity for women. He said, "Women deserve equal pay for equal work. She deserves to have a baby without sacrificing her job. A mother deserves a day off to care for a sick child or a sick parent without running into hardship. And you know what? A father does too. It's time to do away with workplace policies that belong in a Mad Men episode." Well, today we're going to touch on similar issues, but in the context of support for fathers. Our guest is Dr. Brad Harrington. He is the executive director of the Boston College Center for Work and Family and a research professor in the Carroll School of Management. The Center for Work and Family is the country's leading university-based research center focused on helping employers in their efforts to improve the lives of working people and their families. It has more than 100 corporate members, including many of the world's most progressive and well-respected employers. Dr. Brad Harrington, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And I should say I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn, and we would welcome your calls in the conversation as well, especially if you're a father who may have suffered in your career because of the time and attention that you wanted to be able to give to your family. Maybe you've chosen to be a stay-at-home dad, or maybe you've significantly reduced the number of hours you work in order to be a main caretaker for your child. We especially would like to hear from you, and you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'd also welcome your emails at talk@wpr.org, or post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Kathleen Dunn Show. You can also tweet us at K Dunn Show. And Brad Harrington, what do we know about how men's engagement at home and their children has changed over the years? You know, President Obama referred to a Mad Men episode. How much has changed since those really traditional kind of gender role times?
So I think that's sort of a good news, bad news story in terms of how much things have changed and in what direction. So I'd say what you find is that if you look at the time that men spend engaged with their children, that's probably doubled over, say, the last three decades. So there's definitely been an increase of hands-on involvement. On the other side of the coin, you could look at situations like how much leave time do most men take after the birth of a child, and you'll see that not much has changed at all. We did a study in 2011 of almost 1,000 professional and white-collar workers in large Fortune 500 companies and asked them how much time did they take off following the birth of their most recent child. And the answers we got were that 16% of the fathers said, "I didn't take any time at all off," and they meant literally not a day. 76% said, "I took a week off or less," and 96% said, "I took 2 weeks off or less." So on one level, you see that men's involvement in the home is on the increase, but then you could look at some traditional measures in terms of the amount of time fathers are spending at home with their children following the birth, and you would say, gee, that doesn't sound all that different than the, might have been the case, 15 or 20 years ago. It's slightly more, obviously, than was the case back then, but probably not as large a step forward as we might think.
So the New Dad Project of the Boston College Center for Work and Family is a big part of your research right now.
Right.
How did the center come to focus on dads in such a significant way?
Well, I had been, prior to going into academia, I had been with a major high technology company and worked in a number of global roles. And in the last role I was in, we had two children. We were expecting our third. And I was working in Boston. I'm sorry, I was living in Boston, and my office was in Palo Alto. So,
wow.
That started to give me an incredibly heightened sense of how difficult a situation can be from a work-family perspective. So when I came to be the director of the Center for Work and Family at BC, and we engaged with employers around a very broad set of issues that we could say are under the umbrella of work life, one of the things that I found was I would go to academic conferences, practitioner conferences. I would talk to groups about these kinds of issues, and one of the things that often happened was I was literally the only man in the room. Mm-hmm. And after a number of years in the role, I really started to ask myself, You know, why is it that men are just so absent from these conversations? I mean, it's obvious why women were very heavily involved, because since the 1980s, when they got really much more involved in professional and managerial positions, women have always faced the what, you know, Ali Hochschild called the double shift, or the second shift,
right,
where they had to do both, you know, carry out a professional role and also provide caregiving. But for men, this is a relatively newer experience to be to have a really significant caregiving responsibility. So as a result, the more I looked at this issue, the more we found that men were being, you know, facing conflict as a result of this issue. And what I thought is, this is an area which has really been under-discussed and under-researched. So that's how we got involved in this project.
And what do we know about how important it is for dads to spend time with babies or children in relation to what the research has shown with moms?
So some recent research from the Families and Work Institute, they do this study of the National, it's called the National Study of the Changing Workforce, suggested that when they looked at young fathers in dual-career families and compared it to young mothers in dual-career families, and they were asked, what percentage of you people feel some or a significant amount of work-family conflict? One of the surprising results in that study was that the change for women is that from about 30 years ago, 41% of the women said they felt some or a significant degree of work-family conflict, and that number had gone up to 46% over a 30-year period. For men, the number had moved from 31% to 59%. So almost 3 out of 5 men were saying that they felt some or a significant amount of work-family conflict. So, and that was obviously a higher percentage than young women who were reporting that. So one of the things we tried to do is say, given that we know men generally do less caregiving and are less involved in the home, what might be some of the reasons why men are feeling this greater work-family conflict than women are? And we speculated on a couple of things. One was that they had no role models to point to. In other words, when they looked at their own parents or their own fathers, oftentimes their moms took time off at home when they were born and when they were being raised, and so the father had less active engagement with these issues. The second thing we thought is that men and fathers specifically generally work more hours than mothers do. Many women take time out of the workplace either full-time or reduce their hours to part-time. So the average working father in the United States works about 18 more hours than the average mother. So a second reason for this conflict might be the fact that they are simply working more hours than their female counterparts. But then the third reason we speculated, and we have some evidence that would suggest this is true, is for men, talking about work-family issues and making compromises or engaging in flexible work arrangements or reducing to part-time is something that is not necessarily widely accepted within their workplace. So some of this conflict might also arise from the fact that men feel like they aren't doing things to adjust to their family responsibilities, and they don't necessarily feel that their organization would respond well to them if they did.
We are talking with Dr. Brad Harrington. He is the executive director of the Boston College Center for Work and Family and a research professor in the Carroll School of Management. The Center for Work and Family has been doing some really innovative research about new dads, how the changing role of dads is affecting positively families, and how those dads can be supported at home and at work in making choices that put their children and families first. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn. We would welcome your phone calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from stay-at-home dads who have made that choice, what it was like, how they've adjusted to that role, and where they have found support within their families, their group of friends, or their former or perhaps future employers. Also, we would be interested in hearing from employers who may be faced with the challenges of figuring out how to support fathers who would like to reduce their workload, what those steps have been, and we will also look forward to hearing from perhaps women whose partners have decided to stay at home and whether that change in the traditional gender roles has been something to be negotiated. And Professor Harrington, on the website of the Center for Work and Family, you have recommendations for fathers, and one of the first ones is support your fellow fathers. What does that mean to you?
Well, one of the things that happens is, you know, when we think about the acceptance level for dads to pay attention to work-family, we always immediately jump to how supportive is their supervisor, how supportive are senior management, senior leaders in terms of recognizing the role that, that fathers play. And one concern we have is fathers' roles have changed fairly significantly, and it seems that change seems to be escalating and increasing in rapidity in recent years. But we have a sense that when it comes to management of an organization, especially senior leaders, a lot of them may have an outdated view of what fathers really do and the important role that they play, domestic tasks and child rearing and so forth. So one of the ways the workplace needs to be more supportive is by, you know, making sure that, that the management of the organization and the human resources department are really aware of the kinds of, you know, lives that their working dads live and the balance of responsibilities they have to have. But the other thing that's important that we sometimes forget about when we put, you know, the burden on management is that the responsiveness and supportiveness of colleagues, just people you work with, members of your work team and so forth, is also very important. And part of what makes up a supportive workplace is not only the organizational policies, but also the people that you work with day in and day out, and whether or not they respect the choices that a father might make who says, I need to turn down a project or a promotion, or I need to leave at a certain time every day in order to take my share of responsibility for child rearing. So there's been research that's been done that would suggest that fathers who are vocal about their caregiving responsibilities or who use flexible work arrangements at times to be able to take, you know, pick up their kids, to cook dinners, whatever it might be, or who scale back their hours in order to deal with work family, face some prejudice within the workplace, not only from their manager, but really from their colleagues, and sometimes are subject to sort of sarcastic responses, or sometimes it can even go to workplace harassment or bullying, where men who do this are seen as not only lesser as workers, but also lesser as men, because real men don't get involved with these kinds of things. So I think the first thing that's important is that the organization have a clearer and more kind of contemporary snapshot of what our fathers really doing these days and how important is that in their life and how much time does that take up. And the second thing is that men support one another when one of them says, I really want to be a more active parent, and if that means making compromises or choices in the workplace that don't necessarily advance my career but allow me to be more well-rounded as a person, that those choices are respected.
In your recommendations for employers, you have two items that could at first glance look contradictory, but I think you'll be able to explain it. Well, first you have understand and create a family-friendly workplace for all employees, but then you also follow up and say recognize that gender-neutral policies will not suffice. Can you talk about those two sides of that?
Sure. I think, you know, to make an analogy, it's like the difference between equal opportunity and affirmative action. I think affirmative action is an attempt by an organization to say we need to take special steps and special measures in order to get to a level playing field. I think in a like way, the same kind of logic exists here. I think to simply say we have neutral policies when it comes to work and family, certainly that's a good thing to have gender-neutral policies. But I think oftentimes the expectation is the only people who are going to take advantage of these are working moms, for example. Mm-hmm. And so it's very out of the ordinary that we would expect that a man might ask for a reduction in work hours or might ask to utilize flexible work arrangements or might be the one who's responsible to taking their children to the doctors or whatever it might be. So I think what we're suggesting is the policies probably have to be gender neutral, and they should be, But what we need to do is sort of elevate and highlight cases of men taking advantage of these kinds of situations, or men feeling the responsibility to step up and play a more significant role in caregiving. And if the examples and cases that are always used as illustrative are always women, then I think men will feel, they'll kind of quietly look around and say, I know they say these policies are gender neutral, and I know they say people can use flexible work hours, but every time I hear an example from the company, and everybody I know who actually does this is a woman, then men will be probably more reticent to utilize policies that are there to, you know, to make the workplace more family friendly.
We are talking with Dr. Brad Harrington. He's executive director of the Boston College Center for Work and Family, and we are talking specifically about their research and work on the role of dads staying at home, reducing work hours, or maybe staying at home completely in order to be a more present caregiver for their children. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn. Are you a father who has made a choice to put your family ahead of your career? Have you chosen to be a stay-at-home dad, either for a short period or for an extended period? We'd love to hear your experiences. We'd especially like to hear how you what kind of responses you've gotten from an employer, if you've been trying to put your family first, from your friends, from your loved ones. And we would love to hear from you. Again, 800-642-1234. More with Brad Harrington in just a moment. We are talking about the changing role of dads in American families with Dr. Brad Harrington, executive director of the Boston College Center for Work and Family. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Brad, a caller observed that much of the current advertising focuses on the mother-child relationship, mm-hmm. and the caller wonders if this negatively contributes to the issue of people thinking of dads as a more prominent part of a child's life.
Yeah, advertising is an interesting subject in and of itself in terms of the portrayals it makes of men. There was a study done by a couple of marketing professors just a few years ago looking at major sporting events, which we have obviously a major sporting event coming up on Sunday, and how men were depicted in those advertisements. And one of the things that it talked about was that, like, in these major sporting events, it is extremely rare that men are depicted in a family role, and certainly not in a caregiving role. But where, by contrast, during these same events, men were often depicted, driving cars too fast, engaging in some form of risky behavior with their friends at the local watering hole or whatever it might be. So, I mean, I think one of the things that continued to keep men in the, it was interesting the president referred to the Mad Men era. I mean, one of the things that really has kept men in sort of a stereotypical role in the minds of society as a whole might be the way they're depicted both in advertisements and in television. And we see some examples, like one major consumer goods company ran a campaign, let's say thanks to mom, during the last Olympics, and I just noticed in the newspaper the other day that they're going to continue that ad campaign in the coming Olympics. So it's basically, let's thank mom for all she did for us to help us get there. And while obviously we applaud that, it's interesting that they say, let's thank mom and not thank dad.
Right.
By contrast, you see Dove has been running a lot of commercials. Dove for Men is one of their product lines, and they've been running a lot of commercials with professional athletes and showing them engaged very actively with their families. So advertising, by and large, I think, keeps us a little bit behind the times in terms of the stereotypes it portrays of men, but we are seeing some movement in the direction of trying to portray fathers in a more balanced way, but that's still the minority of ads.
Brad Harrington, I want to talk just a little more about the recommendations for employers. One of the things that you say and that you just kind of refer to also is that encouraging men to utilize family leave policies, and that sometimes even if there are policies in place and benefits in place, if a male employee sees predominantly women taking advantage of them, he may not feel as comfortable. And you know, human resources people may not think to offer those things to a male employee because it has been such a traditionally woman-focused thing. But what are the legal protections, benefits that are available for men who would like to be, for instance, present for some time after the birth of a child or might like to reduce their work time?
Well, you know, as far as being available after the birth of a child, I think the legal protections in the United States are relatively minimal for moms and for dads. But what you know, no doubt is, you know, Family Medical Leave Act, which was passed, I don't know, is it 20 years ago now in the Clinton administration, allowed people who work for an employer with at least 50 employees to petition for and get 3 months of unpaid leave time following the birth of their child, and that's true for men or women, with a job guarantee at the end of that three-month period. But that is strictly unpaid. As far as petitioning for to reduce hours or to work flexibly, that's for the most part a company-by-company kind of decision. So progressive companies will say we allow flexibility in terms of the way people work, and that is not just whether they work certain hours or whether they work in the office every day, but also sometimes flexibility includes allowing people to reduce their time to part-time hours following the birth of a child or due to some other family need or family responsibility or crisis that arises. So a lot of this stuff is really down to individual companies to decide. You know, recently you may have heard, like, Rhode Island this past week has enacted at least a short paid family leave for parents. I think that's the mom or the dad, and they're the third state to enact that, following California and New Jersey, I believe. So
to give people a sense of what other countries offer for paid time off,
right.
There's a smattering that were at the end of an article in the Tennessean: Saudi Arabia 1 day, Brazil 5 days, Belgium 10, France 11, Kenya 2 weeks, interesting, United Kingdom 2 weeks, Spain 4 weeks, and then it starts getting even more interesting, Norway 10 weeks, and Iceland 3 months.
Right. So the statute we just were talking about was for dads, correct?
Right.
Yes. So, yeah, what you find is the Northern European countries, Germany, certainly Sweden, Norway, Iceland, and now countries like England are really promoting more paid time off for the fathers. And as you state, you know, 2.5 to 3 months in the Nordic countries is not out of the norm. Nordic countries have always believed in paid parental leave. Initially, obviously, that was mainly targeted at women, and that paid leave can take up to as much as a year. One of the things that they've also, though, you know, really prided themselves on is gender equality in those countries. And what they found was that sometimes the women who were taking that year's paid leave, which was completely acceptable within their culture, would often, though, get sort of marginalized or sidetracked in terms of the kinds of careers they were in. So one of the things they wanted to do in the interest of gender equity was give more paid time off to the father, or at least give the father the option to take some of the time off. So they usually in those countries, they designate a certain percentage of time just for dads, certain percentage just for moms, and then the majority of the parental time off can be used by either spouse, depending on who's in the best position to do that.
Which really makes sense.
What's that?
It really makes sense because each family is unique.
It does. And you know, what they found is by giving a certain percentage of it and designating that only for paternity leave, it becomes kind of a use it or lose it thing. And what you see in countries like Sweden and more recently in Canada and Quebec is that once it becomes kind of a use it or lose it thing, and the fathers may have 4, 6, 8 weeks or more, the majority of fathers take it. I think in Quebec the number is about 80% or more. And if you look at the Scandinavian countries, you're probably approaching 90% in terms of the percentage of fathers who take time off to be with their child. And the last thing I just say on this is the positive knock-on is not just the couple of months that they spend with their child, but the fact that the father is flying solo, that he's the one who's providing the hands-on care, and through that is not only bonding with his child, but also increasing both his confidence and his competence at being a hands-on parent. And so it's not only the time that the fathers have off following the birth of their child that's important, but also they find a year or 2 years hence that the dads who took that time off are more engaged in an ongoing way.
We're going to turn to the phones and take some calls for Dr. Brad Harrington. He is the executive director of the Center for Work and Family at Boston College. We are talking about fathers and supporting fathers who want to prioritize their families, perhaps over work for a short period or maybe over the long term. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to the phones and Aaron in Onalaska. Hi, Aaron.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two things I wanted to bring up for your listeners. One was my own personal experience with this. Being a strong father is a really important thing for me in that I'm a new working professional as a social worker and would consider getting my master's degree, but because my children are so young, I'm delaying in getting my graduate degree in order to watch them grow up. And then two, if the doctor could also comment on, is that as a social worker, I deal with kids with special needs on a regular basis. And I understand that the development of the brain is very important in those first few years between like 1 and 5 years old. And that's another reason why I decided to delay getting my graduate degree, because during that time period, there's so much more to brain development and learning through interactions. And growing up, that's something that I enjoyed as a child. And that's something I want to give back to my children and not pursue a master's degree until they're at least 5 years old or older when they're in full-time kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Aaron. Brett?
Yeah, you know, I'm not an expert on children's development and, you know, the cognitive development and those kinds of things. One of my close colleagues in the field, Ellen Galinsky, has wrote a book called Mind in the Making that talks about those kinds of issues, about how, the first 5 years of a child's life is so formative. And in today's New York Times, there was also an interesting piece about childhood obesity, and that they had a study that tracked children from kindergarten up through eighth grade and then beyond. And what they found is that children who were overweight in kindergarten continued, down the line toward becoming obese when they were in eighth grade, and kids who were not in that situation were very unlikely to become obese at that period. So what that study was talking about is how formative those early years are, and how the behaviors and the skills and the habits that are developed in those years obviously have a very long-term effect. So I think the idea of investing in your child early on and that paying dividends is something that I'm sure pays off in many different aspects of your children's life. This is more from personal experience than through research, but the one thing I will say is I think every parent of a young child, when they're 2 and 3 and 4 and they're so dependent and they have to be watched all the time and they're physically depend on you for all sorts of aspects of their life, every one of us as parents thinks, oh gosh, when they get to be in fifth or sixth grade or when they're in high school, I'll have a lot more time to be able to pursue things that are important to me then. And I think one of the sad awakenings we all find is that once our kids get into school and get into after school activities, get involved in theater or sports or music or whatever it might be, is that that discretionary time seems to actually get less as kids get older rather than more. So I think, it's great that your caller is, decided what his priorities are and living by them. The only caution I would offer is that sometimes you expect things to get less hectic as the kids become more physically independent, but it's not always the case, unfortunately.
It doesn't come when you think it might necessarily.
No, it doesn't. I hear so many women say, oh, when my child's through with daycare, then I'm going to go back to work once they're in school. And a lot of them will then in turn say to me, well, I didn't realize how much more hectic it was when they're in school.
Different needs for sure, but not necessarily fewer needs.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the phones and Tim in Milwaukee. Hi, Tim.
Hi, I'm a stay-at-home dad. I've been raising my kids for 7 years. My wife has the traveling job, and it's been a great experience for us. It's hard getting back into a full-time workforce, I'll say, because I do freelance graphics from the house, and it's a good job. for raising kids because you have a lot of flexibility. Mm-hmm. But it's you know, it's been a rewarding experience for us, and I'm grateful to have done it. I guess my question for the doctor would be, is there any statistics on children's schooling levels or any grades to bear out that, you know, kids raised by their dads have a little advantage?
Thanks for the call, Tim. Brett?
I wish I could cite a research study about that. We did our study in 2012 on at-home dads, and, of course, the first thing we do as a research center when we set out to study a specific topic around fathers is to say, okay, what's the body of literature that's out there? And, unfortunately, the body of literature on at-home dads and the impact of them on kids is extremely limited. Just so your listeners know, the impressive thing is the number of at-home dads or the percentage of at-home dads in the United States has doubled over the last decade. So it's definitely an increasing trend. But that doubling still is less than 4% of stay-at-home parents are fathers. 96% of the time it's mothers. When we did our study, one of the things, well, just say real quickly, what were the key findings in terms of the things that stay-at-home dads struggled with? And the things they struggled with most were, first of all, the stigma. Many men got some feedback, formally or informally, from people who were close to them or merely acquaintances, that somehow this wasn't the right thing for them to be doing, and that wasn't the appropriate role for a man to be at home, and that he should really be back in the workplace earning money. The second thing a lot of the stay-at-home dads struggled with was social networks, because there are such a large, small percentage, I should say, of men who do this. Oftentimes, they feel sort of socially isolated a little bit, and even when they go to, say, parent-child playgroups, if most of the people in those playgroups are women, oftentimes the men will feel, if not formally as an outsider to the group, they'll at least feel like they're not part of the informal network, and sometimes men struggle with social isolation. Women do as well when they leave the workplace and stay home with their children, but men do to a greater degree because there are so few of them. And then the third issue they struggle with is the question of how will this be perceived when I go back into the workplace and decide it is time to work full time. So that said, when we did our study, we asked the men, could we also survey and interview their wives about what their experience has been? And I will tell you that universally, every wife who responded to our questionnaire had nothing but positive things to say about the role, the important role their husband was playing in terms of raising the kids, and what a terrific job the kids, you know, they had done with the kids, and the happiness the children felt being home with their stay-at-home father. So we saw absolutely no negative feedback from the wives about how much they appreciated and enjoyed the fact that their husband was able to make that contribution to the family.
Brad Harrington, going back to that statistic that you quoted, it was from the U.S. Census that in the last decade, the number of men who have left the workforce entirely to care for children has doubled, as you said, but the actual number is 176,000, and you said
correct.
That's 4% of home of
at-home
parents. What do you think has to change? I mean, we've talked about a lot of the factors that influence the decision and can help people make that transition, that help dads make that transition successfully. But what do you think is maybe the one or two most important things to make that feel like a viable option for more than those 176,000 dads?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things is as it doubles and it becomes more prevalent, you will see more articles, more things in the media. Last spring, I think, right before our report came out, there was a cartoon cover on The New Yorker, and it was a woman pushing a stroller into a playground, and when she looked around, every other parent in the playground was a father. and so that was seen as sort of like, oh, is this the new way of the world? I think one of the things we know is that, you know, the percentage of families that can have a stay-at-home parent to begin with is not as great today as it was years ago when some major things were more affordable than they are today. But, you know, for that kind of a change to occur, I think some of what's happening is it's happening kind of right be- before our noses, but we may not quite recognize it. Today, you may know that 60% of bachelor's degrees and master's degrees given by, you know, colleges and universities are going to women. And in major metropolitan areas, women are have starting salaries that are ahead of their male counterparts because they're getting their degrees in shorter periods of time and with higher grade point averages. So oftentimes they're coming into the workplace with better economic prospects than their male counterparts. So I think the economics of the situation is one of the things that's really going to shift this. So where a couple decides one of, they value one of them being at home, I think one of the first questions they ask themselves is who's in the best position to do this in terms of their demeanor, but also who's in the best position to do this from a financial perspective. And when we looked at the men in our at-home dad study, almost every one of them, if not everyone, were in a situation where they were married to a doctor, a lawyer, a business executive, etc. And so they looked at it and they just looked at the economics of the situation and said, gee, my wife's in a position where she has much greater earning potential than I do. And so the decision wasn't really about gender. It was about what made sense for the family economically.
We are talking about new perceptions of dads and stay-at-home dads with Dr. Brad Harrington, the executive director of the Boston College Center for Work and Family. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. We're talking about dads and how we can support dads who want to put their families ahead of their careers. And our guest is Dr. Brad Harrington. He is the director, executive director of the Boston College Center for Work and Family. He's also a research professor in the Carroll School of Management. And Brad, let's go back to the phones and Josh in Lake Wyzoda. Hi, Josh.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to kind of touch base on, you know, fathers that kind of want to take that time off from work when they do have a newer child that came to the family. I had this experience last year in being single and a parent not married is like the exact opposite of being beneficial, especially in the workplace, because not all employers will let the man take time off to be with children or a new family or whatever the case may be, even in the case of emergencies, if they're not married. I just kind of wanted to touch base on that.
Thanks for that call, Josh. And so, Brad, that brings in a whole other dimension of maybe attitudes and policies catching up with even more complexity in modern-day families.
Yeah, you know, and I always know that somebody's going to ask me a question that's going to reflect my lack of knowledge about the laws of the country that are directly related to this. Sometimes I get asked questions about divorced fathers and their rights,
sure,
and single dads and so forth. In this instance, I got to be honest with you and say I don't know whether the Family and Medical Leave Act, whether men who are partners but unmarried are able to or how they're able to show that they're a primary caregiver and therefore being able to take advantage of that law. I mean, the Family and Medical Leave Act is a law, so it's not like an employer can say, I'm sorry, you know, as long as they fit the criteria as an employer, they've got to respect the law and a father's right to take time off, albeit without pay, to be with their children. When they're not married, I'm not 100% sure how the law plays out there, and so I'm going to have to say that's something I'd have to look into to give you an answer about how unmarried fathers can utilize Family and Medical Leave Act to ensure that they get that time off.
Thanks for that call. And, you know, earlier we were talking about how a lot of current advertising focuses on that mother-child relationship. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned the New Yorker cartoon where a mother takes her baby to the playground and it's all dads there with the children. I'm wondering, Brad, if there are either movies, television shows, ads, anything, any element of popular culture that you see really supporting this new and I would say much more enlightened view of the role of fathers in a child's life?
You know, I don't watch a lot of mainstream commercial TV, so I got to say I don't know, except, you know, I know you know, there are certainly that parenthood is a show that I hear reflects more positively about fathers. Modern Family obviously talks about a family where, in one case, there's a married couple in their dual career. In the other case, it's a gay couple who've adopted a little girl. There was a show on about a year ago or so that started called Up All Night, I believe, that was about an at-home father. So I got to say that in my own case, I don't watch a lot of commercial TV, so I'm not that aware of what kind of images are being portrayed of men. But I certainly do think that, you know, for the most part, you know, when I'm interviewed, after the release of one of our studies, almost always the first thing the interviewer says is, Mr. Mom, and they start talking mm-hmm. about it, and I think that movie's going to be 25 years old, and we're still referring
to it. If not more.
Is it more? I never even saw the film. So they refer to it, though, as if this is the latest and greatest thing to help you get insight into how fathers behave these days. So I think that I've started in the last year to see people saying, yeah, that's sort of really passe now, mm-hmm. and let's not refer to that movie anymore. And I know at-home fathers hate being referred to
as I'm sure.
Mr. Mom. So I think that there are some examples of the media portraying fathers in a more positive light, but probably not as many as there needs to be. It's not just a more positive light, it's a more realistic light in terms of what dads are doing.
And what about, I was just thinking as you were saying that you don't watch a lot of mainstream TV, and I was thinking you probably watch a lot of things like Sesame Street and things like that.
No, my kids are a little old.
Okay, well, yep. But I'm wondering, actually, that made me think about what, if any, shifts have there been in children's programming, whether it's television or books, things like that. Has there been a move to give children a different image so that their family, if their family is with a dad who's at home more than the mom is, that doesn't seem so out of step?
You know, if there has been a big movement in that direction, it's just not something that's been visible to me. I think I've been reading too much Harry Potter and the Hunger Games over the last few years, so that probably doesn't reflect well on fathers and so forth. But I must honestly sort of take the fifth on that one and say,
okay,
I'm not sure whether or not there are more adequate portrayals of men in children's literature.
Let's go back to the phones and Karen in Burlington. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thanks for letting me speak.
Sure.
I can't be the only woman listening to this conversation who feels very conflicted. As a feminist to my absolute core, I'm very, very glad to know that men now feel that they can exercise this option to develop a better balance between their work and their home life. But I am also not very sympathetic to the concerns that our guest voices about stigma in the workplace. For example, 20 and 30 years ago, when a woman demanded the opportunity or the right to be able to attend to some family matters and perhaps pushed forward for flex time or reduced hours or job sharing, of course she was stigmatized. And not only was she stigmatized, we didn't think that she had a real commitment to her career. We didn't think that she was really a team player. But she was also passed over for promotion. She was limited in whether or not she would be considered as a partner in the firm. It's hard for me to be totally sympathetic with this worry that, oh, gosh, there's a stigma now. I'm not going to exercise my hard-won right, which, in fact, was won for me by women who were not afraid to face that stigma. Oh, now I'm not going to exercise my family leave right because, gosh, what will the other guys say?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What can you say to those of us who are listening and thinking, man up, you get to take advantage of the rights that we earned for you?
Thanks for that call, Karen. I'm glad that you called in. And Brad?
Well, I'm glad she called in, too, obviously. No, I'm just kidding. No, what I would say is this. I mean, I think that women really had to fight for the right to have legitimacy. They've always, you know, they had legitimacy in the home, but when they entered into the workplace, especially once they moved into professional and managerial roles, they had to fight for legitimacy in that sphere. And there is no doubt that women often did that with less than the desirable amount of support from male managers and supervisors and CEOs and so forth. And I think that what we find today, the caller mentioned 20 or 30 years ago, there was a study done only a couple of years ago where some researchers at Stanford University tried to look at women without children and women with children and how they would be looked upon by employers for hiring and for promotion. And what they found was that when women had children, they tended to be viewed by employers as less committed, less promotable, and even less competent than women without children. So the stigma was not only against women, but it was against women with children more specifically, and the cautions that kind of flew up were not a result of, oh, this is a woman, but rather this is a woman with children, and therefore she's going to have more difficulties measuring up in the workplace. I think fathers are in the opposite situation. So they've had legitimacy in the workplace, but don't really seem to have legitimacy in the home. And although you're right to say maybe the men don't deserve a lot of sympathy, I think what we're finding is that as men try to exercise their privilege to be a whole person, not in the workplace, but in the home environment, that's where they face a lot of stigma and put downs and things of that sort. And you can remedy things like that with organizational policies to some degree for the workplace, but how men are treated in terms of their home life and the kinds of comments they're subject to, the kind of put downs or dismissive comments that they might receive are not something that can be legislated. So I don't think these men necessarily deserve sympathy, but I think it's just important to understand that while women have been penalized for exercising their family rights in the workplace or their family responsibilities in the workplace, men haven't even got to that point yet. And I think there is a real fear amongst men that if I speak up, then I will be, facing some kind of organizational stigma and also the likelihood that I'm doing something that not only makes me seem less committed to the workplace, but may even make me seem less of a man in the eyes of some people.
And just to follow up on Karen's point, first of all, Brad, I think that I'm not putting words in your mouth to say that you certainly appreciate all the work that the feminist movement has done.
Totally.
No, go ahead.
No, I mean, there wouldn't even be a conversation going on around these kinds of issues for men had it not been for the enormous, efforts that women put in to try to say we need workplaces that are more humane and are more family-friendly. That this wouldn't even be a conversation today.
And I also wanted to bring up that in the article that we referenced at the beginning of the program in the Atlantic, Daddy Track, The Case for Paternity Leave by Liza Mundy, she says one strikingly effective strategy used by the highest-ranking countries is paternity leave, which, whatever else it may accomplish, is a brilliant and ambitious form of social engineering, a behavior modification tool that has been shown to boost male participation in the household, enhance female participation in the labor force, and promote gender equity in both domains. So she's really making the argument that this move for support of fathers and paternity leave actually has benefits for women as well.
I mean, if there is one, point I would like to leave you listeners with is that any organization that believes in women's advancement, anybody who considers themselves a feminist or somebody who's interested in, the development and enhancement of women's career opportunities, if you're not 100% behind the thought that men are going to play a more active role at home and men, are going to struggle to be able to have legitimacy as parents, I think you're making a mistake, because the degree to which men can play a more significant role in the home, the degree to which men become sometimes primary caregiver, the number of men who decide to make the choice to be an at-home parent, every time one of those things occurs, that opens up doors for their spouse or partner to be able to move further ahead with their career. When we talked to the women who had stay-at-home husbands, there was no question at all but that they had more opportunities and certainly the opportunity for more career advancement as a result of the fact that their husband had made these choices. So I don't see this as a men versus women issue. And in fact, if anything, I think the more we promote these kinds of issues for men, the more likely it is that our initiatives toward women's advancement and seeing women raised to the top levels of corporate America and in the higher echelons of government and education and so forth, the more we promote men being involved in these kinds of things, the more likely it is that women's advancement will actually come to fruition.
Brad, I know the center is taking on paternity leave this year. Do you think you know what the topic after that will be?
I don't. I think one of the things we toyed with this year, and I think after paternity leave, I think the topic we will either take on would be single fathers, although there, again, is a relatively small number. I think they are certainly an interesting group to look at. Or the other thing we might do is look at men who are in senior leadership positions, you know, in the C-suite, so-called, and their thoughts about not only their own family issues, but how they can play an important role in terms of advancing.
I'm sorry, Brad, but we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. Brad Harrington from the Boston College Center for Work and Family. Thanks to KP Whaley and Dave Potraz for production support today. Kathleen Dunn is back on Monday. Thanks so much. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.